We're on Daf Chof Aleph Amid Beis. Yesterday we learned the sugya of Beit Shammai, and we started the sugya of what's called Sha'os Derabbanan. And if you're counting down from the top of Chof Aleph Amid Beis, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines down, Sha'os Derabbanan. And here's the issue that the Gemara is facing. The Mishnah tells me that Ovar Zmano Osir Bano Oso, that once we get to the sixth hour, everybody agrees that Chametz is Osir Bano. That means that the Rabbanan made Gzeira and they left for a margin of error of 1 hour, and they prohibited chametz in its totality, both for achila and for hanah, from the beginning of the sixth hour. Means at that point, we'll call it 11 a.m. on Yudalad B'Nisan, you're not allowed to sell the chametz, you cannot feed it to your animal, and this was already explicated in the Mishnah from the beginning. So why did the Mishnah have to repeat itself? And the Gemara says that the repetition here of Ovar Zmano Osir Bano Oso is to tell us a din of Rav Gidol Omer Rav, Omer Rav Yochanan, HaMekadesh Mishay Shosu Lamalo, Afil Bechitei Kordonaiso, Ein Choshishin L'Kiddushin. Again, it's a very strange scenario. I can't tell you what motivated him to marry a girl on the sixth hour of Erev Pesach with chametz, but that's what he did. He gave her chametz. You know, maybe he wanted to get rid of his chametz. If he wanted to marry a woman, you know, at the same time kill two birds with one stone. Let her deal with the chametz.
The start of a beautiful marriage.
Wonderful, wonderful start for a beautiful marriage. In any event, that's what he did. And yesterday we asked the following question. This was the last line in yesterday's discussion. On a Doraisa level, according to Torah law, this chametz is mutar b'hanah. We're 1 hour before the Shas Isur chametz. Achilek means that the Isur of chametz is the inception of the Isur chametz is with 12 noon. And now we're 1 hour before that. So as far as the Torah law is concerned, this chametz is not chametz at all. And you're allowed to eat it, you're allowed to do whatever you want with it, it has value, you can sell it. The Rabbanan prohibited chametz 1 hour earlier, and they gave this hour the status of chametz, which means that it's also b'achil, also b'ad, no, you can't benefit from it, you can't sell it to your neighbor, your goyish neighbor, you can't feed it to you, you can't do anything with it. It's valueless. So it's a very paradoxical situation. On the Torah level, it's not chametz, and it's perfectly mutter, and it's valuable. On the other hand, on the Darabonah level, you cannot benefit from this chametz. He went ahead and he was Mekadesh and Isha. Now, whether or not she's Mekudeshes depends upon whether we view the object that he gave her as an object of value, because on a Doraisa level it's mutter, or do we say it's valueless because on a Derabbanan level it's valueless. And in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, we're saying, Lo Chayshina L'Kiddushin. We're not even choshesh for kedusha. We don't even require a get. You know, sometimes we don't know. There's a famous Gemara in kedusha about Safek Karov Lo. You know, he threw the kedusha towards her. We don't know if she got it. She didn't get it. So we say Safek Mekudesh. She needs a get, and she'll never be able to marry a kohen. Here we're saying Ein chayshid le kedusha. There's no value to this kedusha at all. It's not valid. So Rashi tries to explain what's going on over here. Rashi says that we have a principle called Kol Demekadesh Adaita Derabbanan Mekadesh, which means that when a man marries a woman, he declares, or he, shall I say, recognizes that this marriage, this Maisa Kiddushin, should be accepted or validated by the Chachamim. They will determine whether or not this is a valid Kiddushin. And by doing so, what he does is, in effect, he gives over the reins to the Chachamim. If they approve, if they recognize this Kiddushin, then it's valid. If they don't recognize the Kiddushin, then it shouldn't be valid. He, the Mekadesh himself, makes this condition, this stipulation, within his Kiddushin. And he says that the Rabbanan are going to decide whether they want this Kiddushin, they want to recognize it or not. And that's the power called Kol D'Mekadesh Adaita D'Rabbanan Mekadesh. Rashi has a long presentation about this in a number of different places, most prominently in Masechet Ksuvos. And there, Rashi says that when a Mekadesh says Harei Mekudeshesli, etc., he adds Kedas Moshe V'Yisrael. And the words Kedas Moshe V'Yisrael mean that he is making his Kiddushin contingent on Das Moshe V'Yisrael, that Moshe V'Yisrael, meaning the Rabbanon, should accept and validate the Kiddushin. Since we're dealing with a case now of a man who was Mekadesh and Isha in the sixth hour on Erev Pesach, in which the Rabbanon said that this Chavetz is Asur Ba'achilu Ba'hanah, therefore, on a Rabbanon level, we cannot recognize this marriage. Now, once the Rabbanon don't recognize the marriage, then even on a Doraisa level, the marriage is not valid because he made a stipulation that this marriage should be contingent and depend upon the validity which the Chachamim will authorize and validate this Kiddushin. He never did so, because the Rabbanon refused to accept a Kiddushin with Chametz, even though, again, we're talking about Shos the Rabbanon, which means that it's the Rabbanon who said that this is Chametz. But nevertheless, once the Rabbanon added this Isur Chametz, then it's called a Mekadesh Adaita, the Rabbanon Mekadesh, and the Rabbanon did not want to recognize this Kiddushin. That's Rashi Shita in a few places in Shas. Other Rishonim say no. We don't have to activate the principle of Kol D'Mekadesh Adaita D'Rabbanan Mekadesh. Even if he would say, you know what, I'm not going to add this condition. I'm not going to add the words Kedas Moshe V'Yisrael. I'm a rebellious guy. I don't want to accept the authority of the Chachamim. If bin Balabas, I'm going to determine whether this condition is valid. And therefore we should go back to the Doraisa level. So therefore, he hasn't authorized the Chachamim with the power to either recognize or invalidate his Kiddushin. So why then is this Kiddushin not valid? And they offer a different approach. And this approach is called Hefker Bezdin Hefker. The Torah has granted absolute authority to the Chachamim to determine the value or the lack thereof of any object of value. In other words, if the object is owned by Reuven, the Rabbanan could say, no, Reuven, you don't have ownership over the object. And that's called Hefker Bezdin Hefker. Now, I don't know if I should write this on the board. You tell me. No, Hefker Bezdin Hefker. The Gemara in a few places in Shas establishes this rule of Hefker Bezdin Hefker. Therefore, we don't have to activate the principle that called Mekadesh Adas Chachamim Hu Mekadesh, and if the Rabbanan don't want to recognize this Kiddushin, the Kiddushin therefore itself fact is invalid. No, we can activate the principle of Hefker Bezdin Hefker. And therefore we're going to say that since the Chachamim said at the sixth hour Chametz is Chametz, it's also Ba'anah, they were basically saying that it's ownerless. You cannot own this Chametz. It's also Ba'anah. Once they established that this Chametz is ownerless, and they activate their principle of Hefker Bezdin Hefker, then he's not giving her for Kiddushin something that he owns. Michael.
Didn't we have a whole thing about this word Hefker? And that really, what we do is make the Kol Chometz Bittul. We don't make it Hefker. So isn't there something steering?
Well, that's as far as Bal Yiro Bal Yemotz is concerned, meaning if we want to talk about not ownership in the what's called Choshen Mishpat context, which means, according to Jewish monetary law, we're not talking about ownership because you cannot own chametz, but the Torah makes it as if it's yours to require bittul. So as far as Bal Yerovai Motzi is concerned, you're going to violate these Isurim even though you don't really own the chametz. And that was the principle that we had on Daf Vav Amid Beis in the name of Rabbi Yishmael, that Shnei Dvarim Einu B'Shtus Salon Mach. But again, when it says Asana Kosu Kilim B'Shtus, so that's only Lavar Olov B'Bal Yerovai Motzi. It doesn't mean that he owns the chametz. He cannot own the chametz because the chametz is also Vano. And if the Rabbanan apply their, you know, flex their muscle of Hefker Bez and Hefker, they could say that it's already chametz in the sixth hour, and therefore it's Isuri Anah, and if it's also Anah, you don't own it. And how do the Rabbana have the right to be mafkia his ownership? And the answer is because of Hefker Bez and Hefker.
Then what does Mechiras chametz do?
Mechiras chametz is before Shas Isuro, which means that right now chametz is mutar b'anah, so if I could sell it to a guy, once I sell it to the guy owns the chametz. I'm not liable for Bal Yerovai Motzi. I don't own the chametz. Once I get to Shas Isur, now I'm in trouble because I can no longer sell the chametz. It's not mine. So you'll say, well, if it's not mine, I don't violate Bal Yerovai Motzi. The answer is the Torah considers it as if it's mine. It's a fictitious ownership. Rabbi Shmuel equates it with bar v'shus harab. I dig a bar in v'shus harab, and your shor falls into my bar. You can sue me for damages as if I own the bar. I can't own v'shus harab. That's public territory. But the Torah, in certain, what we call the relativity theory, relative to certain dinim, the Torah could say it's as if it's yours, a quasi ownership. In the case of chametz, the Torah gives you a quasi ownership, a fictitious ownership, which is not choshen mishpat because really you don't own the chametz. But in Orach Chaim, as far as the ritual requirement of Bal Yerovai Motzi, the Torah says it's as if it's yours. How do you prevent yourself now from violating Bal Yerovai Motzi? So there are two options. One option is to destroy the chametz. The other option is to be mevatel the chametz. But as far as selling the chametz is concerned, or as far as its monetary value is concerned, once the Torah has imposed an Isur Hanah, it's no longer yours. That's Choshen Mishpat. Therefore, you cannot be Mekadesh and Isur with chametz. The Chiddush of our Gemara of Rabbi Yochanan is to go a step further, that even in the sixth hour, before the Torah called it chametz, and as far as Torah law is concerned, it's not Asur Hanah, the Rabbanan can impose an Isur Hanah 1 hour earlier. And once having done so, we apply the principle of hafkas mamon, which means that it's no longer yours. Why? Because Isuri Anah are not yours. So again, let's just summarize. We have two approaches to understand Rabbi Yochanan and our sugya of Shalos Darabanan as far as Kiddushin. One way is to say, the way Rashi says it in many places in Shas, afkinu Rabbanan l'Kiddushin mei, because called the Mekadesh adai to the Rabbanan Mekadesh. That he made a stipulation that his Kiddushin is only valid if and when the Chachamim validated. If they're not happy with it, then the Kiddushin is batel. Rashi compares it to a different case. I don't want to confuse you. When a man is Mekadesh and Ishal Manasi, makes a Tanai Sheyirtza Abba, that your father will be happy with the marriage. I don't know how many people here in this room can honestly say that when they got married to their respectively to your wife, you got the approval of your wife's husband, of your wife's father. I actually did that, believe it or not. Before I proposed to my wife, I asked my father-in-law, now he's in the hospital, he has pneumonia, but I asked him if I could have his daughter's hand in marriage. You know what he answered to me? Go ask her. That's what he said to me. He was very American already, even though he's a Pelish Yid, you know, from Yaroslav. But in a person makes a Tanai, I'm being Makadish you on the condition that your father will approve of the marriage. If your father says, I don't like this marriage, then it's gone. And so here, when a person says, Al Das Moshe Yisrael, he's saying, I Makadish you on the condition of the approval of the Rabbanan. And the Rabbanan said, well, this is Chametz, it's the sixth hour. We don't consider this a valid Kiddush. The other approach is to say, we don't have to ask him whether or not he stipulated this condition that the Chachamim should be satisfied with Kiddushin, but rather the Rabbanan themselves will impose upon him the rule of Hafkas Mamon, which means they take his possession and they invalidate it. How can they do so? Because of Hefker Bezen Hefker. And what they can say is that this object that you gave her, namely Chametz Mishei Shel Solomala, is Aser Min Rabbanan, Bachila U'Bahana, and therefore it's hefker. It's, as far as you're concerned, it's ownerless, and you don't have the power to be mekadesh and isha with it because it's not yours. The third approach, which I believe is the Shagas Aryeh's approach, I'm not sure, but the third approach is to say, forget about kol mekadesh adai to the rabbanim mekadesh, the tetnai of the kedas mosh. Forget about hefker bezin hefker. Simply, the object has no value. In order to be mekadesh an isha, she has to receive something of benefit. When she receives chametz on the sixth hour, there's nothing that she can do with it. She can't eat it, she can't feed it to her dog, she can't sell it on the market, it's asur v'ano. And that alone is enough to make this object anything but kesef kedusha, because kesef kedusha requires that she receive the benefit. It has to be worth a shavah pruta. Here it's not even worth a shavah pruta, because what's she going to do with this chametz after the sixth hour? There's nothing she can do with it. It's absolutely valueless.
You can't even use it after Pesach.
And you can't use it after Pesach as well. So these are the various approaches. Now at this point I could tell you that we finished the sugya, but I would be dishonest. And I don't want to be dishonest, because the Gemara adds three words here. Afilu bechite kur denaisa. Now, what's this deal about chite kur denaisa? What are these chite kur denaisa, these kernels that come from a place called kur denaisa? And why is the Gemara very keen on adding these three words to tell you an extra chidush? Okay. Afilu bechite kur denaisa. So to appreciate that, we have to turn back to Daf Zayin Amud Aleph, which I have to get out here. So just give me a moment. And you should have it, hopefully, in your Gemara. My Gemara is in part, so Daf Zayin is in this section here. And that's the first time that the Gemara quotes this very same statement of Rabbi Yochanan. Daf Zayin Amud Aleph. So you're counting down three lines in the Gemara, and there's no need for me to read the Gemara because we've already read the Gemara here on Daf Chaf Aleph, but the original is here on Daf Zayin. So what's Chite Kur Denaisa? So Rashi.
We're on the page, I apologize.
So we're looking at Rashi. So if you're counting down for the top of Rashi, it's about seven lines down. Let me count it exactly. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's 8 lines down from the top. You have it? Afilu bechite kur denaisa. So these are kernels of wheat that grow, Rashi says, hatzomchim behare ararot. Now, I'm not sure, Don, if you're going to get to this place in your course, because I don't think it's in Eretz Yisrael. I think it's in Chutz Laretz. I don't know exactly where Ararat is.
Ararat? Sure it's
Ararat.
Ararat?
Ararat. He says it's in Turkey. Kurdistan.
He says Kurdistan.
Okay, it's near Turkey, or maybe it's an area of conflict. So I'm not sure you're going to get that far.
I don't think so.
And I probably would not encourage you, even if it was part of your course, to go there today. The Turks are not our big friends, as you and I know. We don't have too many friends. In Britain, it's up for grabs whether we have friends. In the United States, I think it may depend on the next election. But without getting into politics, we don't have too many reliable friends in the world. That's the bottom line. We have some reliable enemies in the world. That we definitely have. And they seem to outnumber any of our friends. So there's a place called Ararat. Some say that that's where the Teva of Noach landed when it finally got to dry land. In any event, Rashi describes these kernels of wheat, Koshim Heim Ma'ot. In other words, every kernel of wheat has a certain lachus, a certain moisture to it, and therefore it's perfect for making it into flour, and therefore baking bread out of it. The bread that you're going to make out of chite kur denaisa is hardly edible. Maybe it just passes the red line and you could eat it. It may be very healthy. You know, usually healthy bread is not so tasty. Although things are changing now with spelt. I mean, sometimes I can't tell the difference between spelt and wheat. And he says the following. In Bo Aleim Mayim, so these kernels of wheat in Kurdanaisa came in contact with water. He says, Afal Gav Diosi Iser Hanos Chometz Dirabanan. Rashi seems to take the position here that Chiti Kurdanaisa, because they're so tough and they're hardly edible, do not qualify as real chametz. In other words, the Rabbanon made it into chametz. They were worried because if you're going to eat this bread, which looks like, or is similar to other breads, who knows what's going to happen? We can't make that distinction. So now he took chiti kurdenaisa, and he was makadish and isha. Now, on the level of a doraisa, Rashi seems to imply, these chiti kurdenaisa would not qualify as chametz. It's only midrabbanan they made it into chametz. And now we're going to have here chametz derabbanan. So we have two categories of chametz derabbanan. One category is called sha'os derabbanan, meaning the sixth hour. And the other category is chametz derabbanan, which is called, I should write this on the board, but I know this black thing is not working anymore. We have to. I'm sure there's another one somewhere. And anyway, it's called chametz nuksha. So I'll spell that for you. Nun, Vav, Kuf, Shin, Aleph. Nuksha. Or with a hey in Hebrew, with an aleph in Aramaic. And nuksha means it's really tough chametz. Tough and hard. And it's not something that you would want to serve to your guests, even if they like health foods. You won't find it on the shelves in the health food for. It's chiti kurdenaisa, it's chametz nuksha. But the Rabbanan said it looks too similar to chametz, and we don't know if we'll allow him to eat that and benefit from that chametz. Who knows what that's going to come to? And that's also a category of chametz the Rabbanan. So if I wake you up in the middle of the night and I ask you, what is chametz the Rabbanan? You're going to have to give me two answers. Number one, the sixth hour, and that could be chametz gomur, perfect pastry. And number two, it's going to be chametz michiti kurdenaisa, otherwise known as chametz nuksha, which is hardly edible, if edible at all, and is only asur midrabbanan even after noon. In other words, now the time factor is irrelevant. Now, there's one school of thought that reads this Gemara a little bit different than the way I presented it to you. And according to those Rishonim, we'll call them anonymous right now, we'll see if we can attach names to that group, they hold that when it says afilu bechite kurdenaisa, it means that even if it's the sixth hour, which is shalos derabbanan, and it's chite kurdenaisa, it's got two strikes against you. In other words, as far as the hour is concerned, it's only derabbanan, it's before chatzos. And as far as the nature of the chametz is concerned, it's not chametz doraisa. So you have a double whammy over here. And it's derabbanan for two reasons. So we drop it down from a doraisa to derabbanan on two counts. Number one, because the hour is not yet doraisa. Number two, the chametz is not doraisa. Even so, the kiddushin is not valid. And that's a gevaldige chiddush, because that tells you that not only is the shah drabbanan, but the chametz is drabbanan. You're really, really into the drabbanan territory, but nevertheless, the chacham are telling you that chiti kurdenaisa is asur b'adnah, like any other chametz, and even in the sixth hour. And therefore, the rabbanan are going to disqualify the kiddushin for any of the reasons that we discussed above. Now, Rashi here on Daf Zayin, once we picked it up, let's finish it up. And he asks the following question. He says, "V'afagavti osi iser hanos chametz derabbanan." Even though the iser hanos chametz is only derabbanan on the sixth hour, Rashi says, and then it comes along with mafkia and it removes and invalidates kiddushin Torah, and the Torah would validate this kiddushin. V'shari, and now we're allowing an ashes ish, a married woman, to get married to anyone else without a get. How can we do such a thing? He says, we've already answered this question in many different places, and here I have in the Mesoros Hashas a whole list of them. He says, called the Makadish Adaite Durabbanan Makadish. Now, this is a very strange Rashi, because look at the next three words in Rashi. Rashi says, Vehefker best in Hefker. But Rashi is writing on two. What?
He's using them both.
Exactly. He's Posev al Shtei Seifim here. And there's a tremendous amount of literature on this Rashi, because Rashi seems to assume that it's not enough to say either A or B alone. You have to combine A plus B. You have to activate two principles. Number one, called the Makadish Adait Rabbanan Makadish. Number two, Hefker Bezdin Hefker. Vehemif Kiru Mamono. So that's a Bella of a Rashi. Now I have here the Masifta on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph. He's got pages and pages on this piece of Gemara. We haven't even scratched the surface on this Gemara. And basically, Rav Shimon Shkop dedicates an entire section of his famous work called the Shari Yosha to try to understand this Gemara. He doesn't understand exactly what Rashi means when he says, Kol Mekadesh Adas Chachomim Hu Mekadesh. And then he says, Vivkiu Chachom as Kedushin, the Chachom invalidated this Kedushin. He says, this is very problematic. And he has a whole barrage of issues here with this Rashi. Now, if you take a look at Tosfos, the Tosfos is a little bit off the page here. Yeah, here it is. If you turn to that Vav Amud Beis, you see the last Tosfos on the page. He says the following: Pirsha Kudshes Mitchilas Sheish, from the beginning of the sixth Avalon. Here a little bit in time. Dal Karcha Chad Yomali El Chametz Mishesh Shal Salamala Asur Hainu Misof Sheish. So last, again, this Tosfos belongs on Daf Zion, but it's actually misprinted. Yeah, it's printed by mistake. This is a printing error that dates back centuries. And it's printed on the bottom of Daf Vav Amud Beis. And here Tosfos quotes Rabbeinu Tam. And Rabbeinu Tam says that we're talking about Sof Sheish, the end of the sixth hour. Now, this is a little bit problematic because if it's the Sof Sheish, then we're not dealing with a Derabbanan. Right? The Torah prohibits Chametz from the end of the sixth hour. So Rabbeinu Tam says that the Gemara here quotes Chiti Kur Denaisa. And Chiti Kur Denaisa is Chametz Nuksha. Do you see that next to the last line in Tosfos? Chametz Nuksha. He has it with a hey at the end, because in Hebrew it's Nuksha. Nuksha is Miloshin Kasha. You know, it's very tough. It's not really edible. You know, you break your teeth on it. She'eino Asu Nami Elamir Rabbonah. So even if you're at the end of the sixth hour, nevertheless, says Rabbeinu Tam, it's still Derabbanan, hence we have the Chiddush of Rabbi Yochanan, that the Kedushin is invalid, even though on a Doraisa level it's not Chametz, because we're talking about Chametz Nuksha. Now, one of the sugyas that we're going to get to, Mirz Hashem, in the second parak, but much later on, is the sugya of Chametz Nuksha. And the Rishonim vacillate back and forth about what the status of Chametz Nuksha is. First of all, how to identify Chametz Nuksha, and secondly, what's the halachic status of Chametz Nuksha? Some Rishonim hold that Chametz Nuksha is Doraisa, but only as far as Achila is concerned, and not as far as Hanoah is concerned. Other Rishonim say that Chametz Nuksha is Mutar B'Achila, even B'Achila min HaTorah. It's only Derabbanan, as far as Achila is concerned. But be that as it may, without getting into that whole sugya, we'll get to that in its time.
It refers to this special type, this name.
Chametz Nuksha or Chiti Kur Denaisa? What are you talking about?
Chiti Kur Denaisa. It's Chita Kur Denaisa. It's wheat. Now, wheat, just wheat, is not Chametz.
Right, that's why Rashi says, V'nofol in mine. You remember that, Rashi?
Yeah. Okay, so.
Alright, so we're going to put this on the side right now. We'll just summarize our main points here, that we're talking about a Kiddushin on Chametz Derabbanan, and the Kiddushin is invalid. We gave three explanations why it's invalid. We added the Chiti Kur Denaisa, which might mean that it's Derabbanan on two levels. It's the Shah Derabbanan, and it's also Chametz Derabbanan. Now the Mishnah goes on. V'lo yasik bo tanur v'kirayim. So if you turn to the Mishnah back at the beginning of the Perek, you'll see that the Mishnah has already established in the first three lines that with the inception of the sixth hour, you're not allowed to feed your chametz to any kind of an animal. You're not allowed to sell it to a nochri. And over zmano aser banoso. So what is lo yasik bo tanur v'kirayim? What is that adding to us? You cannot use chametz as fuel to heat up your your the different types of ovens. There's a larger oven, which is called a tanur, and a smaller oven, which is called a kirayim. Kirayim is usually when they take a large tanur and they split it into two. It has two compartments to it. Pshita, the verse says, you've already established that chametz is asur b'hanah. If chametz is asur b'hanah, I'm not allowed to benefit from the chametz. I can't feed it to my animal. I cannot sell it on the market. Then for sure, I cannot use it as fuel. Lo tzricha says, what's the chiddush of Mishnah? Is Rabbi Yehuda. Now, in order to appreciate this next line in the Gemara, we have to find a marker. Which, of course, I'm not going to find, and even if I find it, it's not going to work. But let's see if miracles would happen. What happens if I use this yellow thing? Is that going to ruin the?
Make sure that
it might ruin the whole thing.
To the office.
No. I'm just going to see if it works. It works. If not, we just keep going.
It's traceable to make all
okay. There's something. Oh, look at that! You see, miracles happen. There's something called nisraf. Now, in order to appreciate what this concept means, I have to add another concept called Nases Mitzvos. Okay, let's go step by step. There are objects that are asur, and the Torah adds a mitzvah, and the Torah says nisrafin. The Torah says you have to burn those objects. Okay, the classic example is going to be nosar. Okay, so for this we'd have to learn a little bit of kadshim. The Torah gives for every single carbon and I'm not talking about a carbon ola, but every other carbon except for an ola, the Torah gives a certain allotment of time for the eating of the meat. Beyond that allotment of time, if the meat has not been eaten in that carbon, it becomes nosar. And the Torah says with regard to nosar, ba'esh tisrofu, you have to burn the nosar with a fire. That makes nosar, in a sense, a classic category of nisrafim. Nisrafim means there's a mitzvah to burn it. Now, there's an interesting concept here called nases mitzvoso. Nases mitzvoso means that on the one end, you have something that's completely asur. You're not allowed to have any benefit from it whatsoever. That's called nosar. It's asur b'ano. And now we go to the other polar extreme. The Torah gives you a mitzvah to burn it. Once the Torah gives you a mitzvah to burn it, then we apply the principle of Nases Mitzvaso, and the Torah is telling me that once I fulfill that mitzvah, it's completely mutter. I can enjoy it and benefit from it in any way whatsoever. Okay? That's called Nases Mitzvaso, which means that the Isur is inherent in the object until I fulfill the mitzvah. And if the Torah gives me a mitzvah, then once I fulfill the mitzvah, that completely removes the status of the object as Asur. Now it becomes Nases Mitzvaso. So you'll have to accept this as a klal right now. What is the status of chametz? I want to burn this chametz and enjoy the benefit of the fire that comes from this chametz. Can I apply the principle of nases mitzvos? And it all depends. Did the Torah command me to burn this chametz? That's machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chacham. The Chacham say the Torah never commanded you to burn the chametz. The Torah said tashbisu, which means destroy the chametz. You can find many different ways of destroying the chametz. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, holds ein bir chametz ela sreifa. The only way to fulfill this mitzvah of destroying your chametz is by burning it. And if that be the case, then we should apply the principle of nisrafim to chametz. We should classify chametz according to Rabbi Yehuda as nisrafim. Then it's in facto nases mitzvaso. I should be allowed to use chametz as my fuel to heat up my oven. Why? Because I burn the chametz. That's called nases mitzvaso. And once it's nases mitzvaso, as we said before, paradoxically, we move from one extreme to the other polar extreme, and now chametz becomes mutter. So the Gemara says the following. Lo tzricha, why did the Mishnah have to add this clause and clarify that you cannot use chametz as fuel to heat up your oven? L'Rabbi Yehuda, we need it for Rabbi Yehuda. The Amar Rabbi Yehuda holds in our Mishnah. That's the seif of our Mishnah at the beginning of the second parak. Ein bir chametz el esreifa. Salke daitech amina. I would have logically applied the following rule. Ha'il since Amar Rabbi Yehuda mitzvasa esreifa. It means that what mitzvah do I have to fulfill vis-a-vis this object, this chametz? I have to burn it. Is therefore, while I'm burning it, I can enjoy the benefit of the fire that comes from this chametz. Behadi, meaning as I am the kasarifle, I'm busy burning it. Lisheni mine. Lisheni is the conjugation in a verb of the word hanov, benefit. Lishani, he should actively be able to have hanov. Why? Because he's being mekayim the mitzvah of what? Of sreifa. Gershon, did you say something? I thought you said something. I don't know. What?
I was just saying kamash a lot at the end there.
So oh, okay. Well, I'm not up to the kamash. I'm just trying to understand right now the havmin. So the havmin is the following. Can I benefit from the fire that comes from this burning chametz and use it as fuel to heat up my oven? It depends. If there's a mitzvah of sreifa, then yes, I should be able to enjoy the benefits of this chametz as I'm burning it, because the Torah says a mitzvah to burn it, and now we can apply the principle of naseis mitzvah, so I'm implementing my mitzvah. So while I'm implementing my sreifa, I should be allowed to benefit from the fire and let it heat up my oven. Kamash Malon, the Mishnah says that even Rabbi Yehuda would prohibit it. And here we have to begin to understand why. If we're applying the principle of Ein Bir Chametz El Sreifa, that's principle number one. Number two principle is Naseis Mitzvah Sam Mutter. Then the question is, why should it be prohibited to use the chametz as I burn it as fuel to heat up my oven? So here we have two approaches. One approach is the Ran. The Ran says that when we say Naseis Mitzvaso, that's only after it's burnt. As long as it's still burning and the chametz is still there and the fire is attached, you know, is grabbing onto the chametz, because it's only after the chametz becomes afer, becomes ashes, at that point the fire is going to die down. But when the fire is alive and well, right, it's still chametz. So that's not Naseis Mitzvah. So Naseis Mitzvah means with the completion of the mitzvah, it's no longer considered chametz because I completed the mitzvah. But as the fire is going up, that's not a completion of the mitzvah. The chametz is still very real. It's very much alive. Then we have another approach. And that is that this whole Isur is all Durabbanan. On a Daraisa level, as far as the Torah law is concerned, you're allowed to benefit from the burning of the chametz, because the act of burning itself is the mitzvah, and the mitzvah of burning, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is enough to permit any benefit that I get from that fire. And even if the chametz hasn't been burnt yet, that's on a Daraisa level. But Midrabbanan, they prohibit it. And Rabbanan said, you know what? We're afraid that if we allow you to benefit from this chametz in the case of kirayim and tanur and heat up your oven, you might mistakenly come to conclude that chametz is mutaba. No, I can get any benefit from it. So according to the first answer, since the chametz is still alive, it hasn't been burnt to a crisp yet, it's not ashes, then the principle of Naseis Mitzvah doesn't apply. Even on a deraisa level, I'm not allowed to benefit from this fire. In the second answer, the second approach would have it that on a deraisa level, I'm allowed to use the chametz as I burn it to heat up my oven, but derabbanan prohibit. It's only an iser derabbanan. I'm just going to mention, as we were about to start the most important sugya of this perek, which is a gigantic sugya, that this last piece of Gemara about Ein Bir Chametz El Sreifa is the subject of one of the most famous chidushim of Reb Chaim Brisker. Phil, what are you giving out over there?
Nothing.
What?
Too healthy.
It's like Chametz Nuksha. It's like Chitei Kurdenaisa.
Okay. It's hard.
You know what? If it's Chitei Kurdenaisa, you eat it, Phil. You know what I'm saying?
It's hard.
Yeah. I'll hold, you know, with your health, I'm going to hold on to your bootstraps and you're going to carry me to health. But you eat the food. I don't want to eat it. Anyway, I'm just joking. So what are we coming back to? Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim says the following. This Gemara makes no sense. Even if you don't hold like Rabbi Yehuda, even if you accept that various alternatives present themselves to destroy your chametz, you can crumble it and throw it to the wind. But nevertheless, when you burn the chametz, That's also an option. Nobody's excluding, nobody's denying that burning the chametz is one option. Rabbi Yehuda says it's the only option. The chachamim broaden your options, but everybody agrees that sreifa is a mitzvah of tashbisu. It's, according to chachamim, it's one of many different methods of destroying the chametz, but certainly it's a valid method. So even according to chachamim, we should have applied the principle of nases mitzvosa. If the Gemara has a havamina here that you could enjoy the benefit of the fire of the burning chametz because nases mitzvoso, then you don't have to quote Rabbi Yehuda. Even according to chachamim, it's nases mitzvoso. Albeit the chachamim may broaden our options, and there are many different ways that you can fulfill the mitzvah of tashbisu and destroy and dispose of your chametz, but one of those options is certainly sreifa. And therefore, when you burn the chametz, you make a bracha, asher kitshanu mitzvoso mitzivanu, al bir chametz. Otherwise, we'd be in deep trouble. We pass like chachamim, that you don't have to burn your chametz. But yet, our meaning is to burn our chametz. So you're going to tell me I can't make a bracha because that's not bir chametz? No, the chachamim would certainly agree that sreifa is bir chametz. It's a valid option. So why not apply the principle of nases mitzvoso? The Gemara seems to imply that according to chachamim, there's no doubt in anyone's mind, there's no chiddush at all to tell me that chametz is also to be used as fuel to heat up your oven. Why is that so? Even according to chachamim, I should apply the principle of what? Of nasis mitzvahs. So that on this we have Reb Chaim. This Reb Chaim is so famous because it really breaks new ground of what we call the Brisker Derech. Have you ever heard of that? The Brisker Derech? You see, it's important for me to share with you this concept called the Brisker Derech because I was raised in this approach, in this methodology. So if we're all learning together, I want to make sure we all understand that there's something called the Brisker methodology. And Reb Chaim basically says, again, I'll give it to you in a nutshell. Again, this is so profound, we would have to study this for hours and hours. Reb Chaim says the difference between Gavra and Chefza. And he says the following. Let me try to explain. There are two ways of understanding Tashbisu, destroying your chametz. One is a din in the Chefza, that the Torah wants this Chefza to be destroyed. And the other is a din in the Gavra. The Torah wants the Gavra to be chametz free. Destroy your chametz because then you are not in possession of chametz. This, according to Reb Chaim, depends, these two definitions, on the machlok shim Rabbi Yehuda and Chacham. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's a din in the chefza, that the chefza has to be destroyed. And Rabbi Yehuda says that the Torah specifies a particular way, this is the only exclusive way, of kiyum chefza, to destroy the chefza, and that's sreif. The Chacham say no. The mitzvah is not in the chefza at all. The mitzvah is in the gavra. If you could send your chametz out in a spaceship and it would end up on Mars, that would be fine. Destroying your chametz is a means to an end. It's only to achieve the goal of your being without chametz. And the difference is going to be nases mitzvoso. Nases mitzvoso only applies when the chefza has to be destroyed, when the sreifa, the burning of the object, whether it's nosar, whether it's chametz, is a kiyum, it's a mitzvah in the chefza. The Torah has zero tolerance for this chefza. This chefza becomes enemy number one, and it has to be destroyed. Then we apply the principle of nases mitzvoso. But if the kiyum is not in the destruction of the destruction of the chefza is only a means to an end, and the end is that the gavra, the person, be chametz free, then there's no nasis mitzvah. Because nasis mitzvah, to be mater hana, means that the Torah tells you to destroy the chefza, to set it on fire. Okay, again, I'm giving you just the tip of the iceberg. Rabosai, we're about to embark upon a major, major sugya. And this is going to take us through half the perek. And what's crucial for me, and I'm going to ask you for your partnership here, is that you tell me exactly where I lose you. I mean, hopefully I won't lose you. But if you don't tell me honestly, it's gonna have repercussions down the line. So we have to lay down the foundations. First of all, let's get the names straight. There's Chizkiah and there's Rabbi Avohu. You're going to be hearing those words from me if you attend the Shia, and I'm warning you now, 50,000 times. Over and over and over again. Every single Shia now, for the next month or so, I'm going to be mentioning to you Chizkiah and Rabbi Avohu. What is the issue that is the subject of the debate, the great, great controversy between Chizkiah and Rabbi Yavo, which is quoted all over Shas. I mean, this is one of the key sugyas to open up the doors to Shas. What we're talking about is the following. The Torah says that this object is asur. What does that mean? Does that mean it's asur b'achila and only b'achila? Or does it mean it's asur b'hanah? Achila is just one example, the most profound example, of hanah, of benefit. And here we have a machlokus between Chizkiah and Rabbi Avo. Chizkiah's opinion is that if the Torah tells you not to eat something, it means don't eat it. Period. You can feed it to your dog, you could sell it to a guy, you can use it as combustion, you know, as fuel for your oven. It's mutar b'hanah. It means that unless the Torah indicates that it's asur b'hanah, in the absence, is innocent until proven guilty. That's the sheet of Chizkiah. Rabbi Avo has the opposite sheet. Rabbi Avo is of the opinion that whenever the Torah prohibits you to eat something, that's just a way of expressing don't have any benefit from it. The most profound form of benefit is eating something, but there are many lesser kinds of benefits, and they're all included under the pasuk that says, "Lo tochal, you shall not eat it." So that's Rabbi Avo. So let's go over this one more time. Because again, these are the fundamentals. According to Chizkiah, when the Torah says, do not eat it, it means that you shouldn't eat it. And that's it. That's the extent of the prohibition. You want to tell me it's also about, no, prove it to me. That's what I call Chizkiah is of the opinion, innocent until proven guilty. Again, I'm just using that as a memory device. If it helps you, fine. If it confuses you, leave it out. According to Rabbi Avo, guilty until proven innocent. Whenever the Torah says achila, it means hana, unless the Torah explicitly permits you to have benefit from it. Amar Chizkiah, minayin lechametz v'pesach shu aser b'hana. Where does the Torah say that you're not allowed to benefit from chametz? In fact, I looked in the pasuk, and the Torah says, don't eat chametz. So Chizkiah has a real problem. Because when the Torah prohibits you from eating, it means just that. Don't eat it. You want to prove to me that you're not allowed to have benefit from it? You want to expand the scope of the prohibition to include any? Prove it to me. Innocent until proven guilty. Says Chizkiah, I have a proof that chametz is asur b'hanah. Why? Because shenemar lo ye ochel chametz. Now you can't read this word yud aleph chaf lam without the proper vowel. What are they called in English? Vowels? The nekudot? Oh, okay. I guess nekudot is also in English. Okay, good. So without the proper nekudot. And what you have to do is, this, I think it's called in English reflexive. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. Lo ye ochel. It should not be eaten. Passive, I think it's causative. I don't know, passive. Okay. Anyway, what does lo ye ochel mean? Now notice that as a general rule, the Torah says lo yochal. Lo yochal or lo sochal. Here, the Torah went out of its way and said lo ye ochel.
That's causative.
Okay, call it causative, call it reflexive, call it active, call it passive. Call it what you want. I don't want to deal with it. Do you guys want to fight this out now or later? Do you mind if we postpone this fight until later? Just because I have about 10 minutes to introduce the most profound sugya in this perek called Kol Shah. Okay. Lo ye ochel. Lo ye ochel. Says Chizkiah. You know what that means? Lo ye ochel. And this is very complicated. Lo yehebo heter achila. Now again, art school maybe will help you, but I think I can do a better job than art school. Now that's gaiva on my part. I shouldn't say that. But what I mean to say is, lo yeochel lo yehebo heter achila. Lo yeochel means don't. Your relationship with the chametz is such that you shouldn't have any permission to do anything with that object, in this case chametz, that could bring you to achila. Again, when I talk about achila here, the word achila doesn't mean eating the chametz. Okay, that's the simple way of understanding it. You know, intuitively, and I could have left it like this with you, and you guys would have accepted it. But Rashi doesn't accept it, so I want to learn Rashi's pshat. You could have learned it that lo yebo. You know, it's if I allow you to eat it, then eventually you're going to do other things with it. Or if I allow you to do other things with it, then you might come to eat it. No. That's not what it means. What it means is that heter hanah. Permission to benefit from something is called achila. Why is that called achila? After all, I sold it, I didn't eat it. But the answer is, what did you do with the money that you got in return for the sale? You could have done a lot of things with the money. You might have gone ice skating in Metula, but instead, you decided to buy food. That food is not chametz, right? So the word achila helo yehebo heta achila is not referring to achila's chametz. It's referring to achila as a concept, just eating. I mean, this is a Jewish concept. We eat, right? We love to eat. Right? You didn't love to eat. Of course, we like to elevate the food to a higher spiritual level, right? So now, if the Torah is going to allow you to sell this chametz because it has value and have hanah from it, that's going to lead to achila. So lo yeachel doesn't mean do not eat, but rather don't do anything that could lead to achila. Achila is a general concept. So if we allow you to sell the chametz, you take the money that you benefit from the sale and you buy food. Says the Gemara, and this is the key of keys. Time, the reason why chametz is also ma'anah, according to Chizkiah, is the kasav rachmono lo ye'achel chametz, because that very peculiar grammatical expression lo ye'achel chametz, the grammatical lo ye'achel, whatever you want to call it, passive or causative, you'll take your choice and fight it out later, is lo ye'achel chametz is an unusual phrase. But halo kasav lo ye'achel, in a classic situation, and we're going to give many, many examples of during the next couple of weeks, the Torah doesn't say lo ye'achel, but rather it says lo tochal. Halo kasav lo ye'achel, if it didn't say lo ye'achel, hava mina, I would come to the conclusion that isra achila b'mashma, that when the Torah prohibits achila, it means achila and only achila. But Iser Hano Lo Mashma. So again, Rabosai, here's the quiz question for Chizkiah to see if you have it or you don't have it. If the Torah says Lo Tochal Nevela, you shall not eat Nevela, what would Chizkiah say about that? Listen carefully. Lo Tochal Nevela.
Can't eat it.
You can feed it to your dog. But if the Torah says lo te'achel, that means lo yehebo heter anah, you're not allowed to have anything that would bring you to achila, meaning to sell it on the open market and use the money to buy food and eat the food. Upliga de Rabbi Avo. And Chizkiah argues with Rabbi Avo. The Omer Rabbi Avo, kol makom shenemar, whatever it says achila, it could say lo ye'achel, it could say lo sochal, it could say lo sochlu, is echad, please underline these words, echad isra achila, vi echad isra hanah b'mashe, you're guilty until proven innocent, and achila includes hanah, ad sheyafareit lecha kasav, unless you can prove to me that the Torah allows you to benefit from it. And what is the paradigm case where the Torah says you shall not eat it, but then the Torah says, but you can benefit from it? That's nevela, an animal that died without shechita. And the Torah says, la kelev tashlichun oso, take the nevela and feed it to a dog. Which means that the Torah went out of its way to be mater hano. If the Torah hadn't done so, then lo sochlu kol nevela would have meant echad isra achila v'echad isra hano. You're guilty until proven innocent. The case of the veil becomes the paradigm for the heter anah that's written explicitly in the Torah, implying that if it's not written in the Torah, then lo sochlu, the mention of achila, includes hanah as well. Now, Rabbos, I can't employ you to if I would beg you to review this 50 million times, it wouldn't be enough. Because again, everything that we're going to do from now comes back to this Gemara, and it's going to go on and on and on. So again, Let's just summarize. According to Chizkiah, when the Torah says no, do not eat it, it means do not eat it, but you're allowed to benefit from it, you're allowed to have hanor from it, unless it says lo ye achel, a very strange formulation of conjugation. According to Rabbi Avo, on the other hand, when the Torah says do not eat it, eating is just a catchphrase, it's a secret password for do not benefit from it, unless the Torah went out of its way and allowed you to benefit from it. And that's the paradigm case of Nevelah, says Rabbi Avo. Since in the case of Nevelah, the Torah felt compelled to add Lakelev Tashlichun Oso, which means allowing you to take the Nevelah and benefit from it, therefore the Torah is telling you that if not for that explicit heter, it would be Osur Banno. Now, let me just sharpen it up a little bit, because I gave you, like, if you ever take an eye test, you know, they first show it to you and it looks a little blurry, and then they put, you know, other lenses in your eye, all of a sudden it becomes sharp, you have a keen vision. So what I gave you until now is a little bit of a general view. Now let's sharpen the lens a little bit. In the case of Nevela, the Torah doesn't say Lakelev Tashlichun Oso. That word, that phrase, Lakelev Tashlichun Oso, actually appears, if you want to be technical about it, in a different parasha. That's called Trefa. Trefa is different than Nevela. Trefa means that you could have shechted it. It's not Nevela where the animal died and dropped dead without Shechita. Take this Trefa and shecht it. It wouldn't help you. The Torah says it's prohibited. You're not allowed to eat this trefa. Why? Because the animal has an injury and it's going to die. Again, I'm not going into details about what a trefa is, but just in a general sense. In the parsha of trefa, the Torah says, Lakelev Tashlichun Oso. In the parsha of Nevela, the Torah becomes very, very specific with a mandate what you do with the Nevela. And the Torah says the following: Lager asher bisharecha titmena, o machar lanochri. We've got two categories and two actions. We have one category called a ger. We'll talk about that in a second. And here the Torah says, give it to a ger. Lager titmena. Titmena means give it to him. And there's another category, and that's a non-Jew. He's not a ger. He's not interested in becoming a ger. What's our relationship with him? Oh, machar timkar, you sell it to a non-Jew. In the case of a ger, it's a non-profit gift, gratis. What do you do with the nevela if you have a ger? Give it to the ger. Let's support the ger. How do we support the ger? The ger is allowed to eat nevela. Now, why is a ger allowed to eat nevela? Because we're not talking about a ger tzedek. We're talking about a ger tosha. What is a Ger Toshev? Ger Toshev is a non-Jew. They say that there are a bunch of them down south in America. I don't know if this is true. There's some rabbi running around there making them into Gerim. I don't know. He's a non-Jew who wants to be, so to speak, an auxiliary member of the Jewish people. In other words, he supports the state of Israel. What kind of a guy are we talking about? We're talking about a guy who's absolutely dedicated to fulfill how many mitzvahs? Seven mitzvahs. The seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach. And he's willing to show up in a Jewish court and make a declaration that I know that Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah and gave us, non-Jews, seven mitzvahs. I'm absolutely committed to those seven mitzvahs. And I can tell you that six out of seven of those mitzvahs, it's a cinch. It's really a cinch, as long as he's willing to commit himself and declare this is the Torah. The one that's a little bit complicated is called Eiver Min Achai. And again, we're not studying a major sugya in Sanhedrin exactly what Eiver Min Achai is, but there are certain things that even a non-Jew is not allowed to eat. The rest of the other six are pretty simple. He's called a ger. He's not a full ger, because he only has how many mitzvahs? Seven. A ger tzedek takes on 613. He, the ger toshav, is allowed to eat nevela, and we as Jews have to give our nevela as a gift to the ger to recognize that we want to support the ger and we have to give it to him gratis. Then we have a Nochri. A Nochri is not interested in a powerful religious relationship to the Jewish nation. He may be a good friend, we hope, and he's not interested in mitzvahs. Here the Torah says, you know what, we don't have an obligation to support him. We will not give him the Nevela gratis, but we can sell him the Nevela if he's willing to pay a price, because for him, a Nevela is just as good as a Shkuta. We'll charge him for it. In this context, the Torah permitted Nevela Bahanah, says Rabbi Avohu, since the Torah had to go out of its way to permit Nevela Bahanah, the implication is, had the Torah not done so, then the Issur Nevela would include even Hanah as well. Hence, Rabbi Avos says guilty until proven innocent. As a general rule, whenever the Torah enjoins us from eating something, eating is just a paradigm and a catchphrase for Hanah. We're not allowed to benefit from it in any way, shape, or form. The only exception is where the Torah went out of its way, like it did in the Vela, to permit Hanah. And how do I permit Hanah? I take this Vela, I give it as a gift to a ger. Let's say I don't have a ger in front of me, so I sell it to a Nochri. Would I be allowed to sell it to a Nochri if a ger would like to have it for free? That's going to be the sugya that we Mishnah will do tomorrow. That's in the parasha Nevela. There's one other parasha that we know of where the Torah went out of its way to permit Hanah. That's the parasha of Trefa. In the parasha of Trefa, an animal that has an internal organ injury, there the Torah says, "Lakelev tashlichun oso," you're allowed to feed your dog. And that's called a heter anor. Says Rabbi Avo, in these cases, the Torah had to go out of its way to explicitly permit Hanah, because in the absence of that explicit heter, it would be asur b'hanah. Chizkiah says no. Chizkiah says, if the Torah says don't eat something, then it means don't eat it, but you're allowed to have Hanah from it. Why did the Torah have to go out of its way to be matir nevela and give it as a gift to the ger or sell it to the nachri? That we're going to have to stay tuned for tomorrow. But according to Chizkiah, when the Torah says don't eat something, it means just that, don't eat it, you're allowed to have Hanah. The exception is going to be when the Torah used a very unique conjugation to teach me lo yehebo heter sheyavo lidei achila, which means the Torah prohibited Hanah. That's going to be the case of chametz, because it says lo yeach. Okay, Rabosai, we'll stop here. Yeah, questions.
So this lo yeach. So this is one of a small set of mitzvot relating to chametz. You have bior. You have, in other words.
I thought you were going to say it's a small set of cases where the Torah is going to use that unusual phrase. There are a couple of other.
No. But I'm thinking regarding chametz, we have other commandments related to Pesach and chametz, and
right.
You know. So in terms of. It's just not eating it. You also have to remove it. You have to,
yes. But I'm not sure why that's germane. In other words, you're right. You know, it's chametz is asur. Everybody agrees. Both Rabbi Avo and Chizkiah agree that chametz is asur b'ano. The question is why? According to Chizkiah, chametz is asur b'ano because it says lo ye'achel, and according to Rabbi Avo, chametz is asur b'ano because all isuri achila, unless we know otherwise, include even an isur b'ano. Now, what do you do with the chametz? The Torah commands you get rid of the chametz.
Right.
That's already shlav bet. You know, that's not relevant to us today.
We just want to know how
do you derive the conclusion, which is the fundamental premise of our Mishnah at the beginning of the second parak, that chametz is asur b'ano? How do you know that? What's the source? And chametz now becomes sort of like a window through which we get a perspective on many, many different isurim, all of which will come up in the next couple of blocks.
I'll stay tuned.
Mitch?
I felt funny smiling when you did the chametz chiddush, because I was about to ask you that question.
Wow.
What you're talking about. It felt so good. This semester at Herzog, Mary Christine for the first time is giving a course on Delft-esque.
Oh,
so I'm going to take that course.
I wish you could have been here when I gave years and years on this, right here in the ELC. But it's all up on why you told, if you ever want to listen to me.
It's something I'm looking forward to that.
I've written extensively on that topic.
The semester starts on Sunday, and I think Mary Christine is a good person to listen.